I have
current geek.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Current Geek, the weekly proceedings of the meetings of the Frog Pants All-Stars, geeks of the world, and you to keep you current on all things that matter most. I'm Scott Johnson with Tom Merritt.
Good to be back in the saddle again. I don't know if you know, but I added a saddle to my chair.
No.
Return. Yeah, feels good.
No. Okay. That's good to know. Is it electric? Is it like a not rhinestone cowboy? What's it called? When they move around, it's like a robot. Is that one of those deals?
Oh, like a bucking bronco. Yeah. Robot? Yeah. Mechanical bull. That's what you're going for.
That's what I meant.
Yes. It will be now. Absolutely. Okay. No, I figure, you know, if I'm going to stay down here in southwest Los Angeles, California, might as well lean into the whole Western feel.
I agree. I'm glad you've embraced this new part of your lifestyle.
Yeehaw.
Welcome back to the show, everybody. Right? We are glad to be back. Although next week you're gone, right? Aren't you gone somewhere next week? There's something happening.
No show next week.
Yeah, we got a weird first part of the month. I have a bunch of co-hosty people that aren't in town, which is kind of weird for a lot of the shows. But today we're here. We have a great show. And as it so happens, we have guests. Let me start with Bill Duran. You know him. You love him. He's been here before. He'll come here again, probably. You know him from punishedprops.com. He builds all kinds of rad stuff. Bill, what's going on?
Hey, I'm playing with space guns today like you do.
Yeah, space guns,
Let's see, I've got a... Looks pretty legit. I promise, it's not a real gun.
Okay.
All right. Yeah, I'm glad you said that.
Playing with an airsoft gun. I've got a...
Or Twitch Overlords.
Number here from Destiny that I built a little while ago. Oh,
look at that.
Also not that. Real.
That's pretty hot. Yeah. So that is good to know, so that our any sort of Twitch policing that's going on right now will not get mad about any actual firearm shown on the screen.
No. All fake guns here.
Very good.
All fake guns all day long.
Later on, we'll hear more about Bill's current projects, what he has going on. He's an old friend of the show, but he's always making things that make us all wonder how we even know him. So more on that later. Also joining us for the first time, but not for lack of trying. We've tried a couple other times, and it was our fault. He hasn't been on yet. Welcome to the show, Eric Dow, the director of Dead End Behind the Mask and a filmmaker right there in Los Angeles. What's going on?
What's up, fellas? Good to be here, finally.
Yeah, it's good to have you on, man. And we hope to have you back again so that we can make up for those times we canceled on you.
I say absolutely.
It's good to have you here, man. We'll talk more about your stuff later as well. Tom, we probably should get right into the headlines first. Mm-hmm. And if we did, I'd probably have music for it. There it is.
Sure.
Oh, that's not very loud. Hold on. Let me try that. Let's have Scott try that again.
Herbert Hoover, Secretary of Commerce in 1922, finds infant radio facilitates news gathering, as do many others in high public office.
Tom?
Astronomers published a study in the journal Nature describing seven Earth-sized exoplanets determined to be orbiting the ultra-cool dwarf star, and we mean that by temperature. It's kind of staid and boring otherwise. TRAPPIST-1. TRAPPIST-1 is 40 light years away. All planets that were discovered are rocky, and three are in the star's habitable zone. So astronomers want to continue looking at these planets to see, can we tell what kinds of atmospheres they have, if any? Do they have signs of liquid water? Lots of people bandying around the term life. And NASA's having a blast with these things, putting out artist conception that make them look like Earth. We don't know what they look like. And also putting up travel posters so that, you know, you could take the 40 light year trip out there.
It sort of confirms what we kind of suspected, that perhaps there were many cases of this sort of thing. But this is a nice little semi-confirmation that perhaps intelligent life exists in a similar galaxy somewhere. Pretty stoked about the whole idea. I have a friend in the military whose immediate reaction was, we should shore up our defenses, is what he told me, which I thought was a little odd. Kind of jumping the gun slightly, but hey, whatever. You know, you got to think of all the contingency plans when you find out that there's a potential. And maybe they're just thinking, well, they're as warlike as us sometimes, and maybe they want to get over here and do some business. I don't know.
Bill, build them for real, will you?
Yeah, let's make it happen.
I think if there's anything on that planet that could harm us, they probably already know about us. So we're probably safe.
We need to get there first is what you're saying, Bill.
Yeah. Oh, well, yeah, clearly.
Yeah. No kidding. But it's a cool idea to think that all our science fiction notions about, you know, what might be out there could literally be out there. And I don't mean there's, you know, gray-headed giant-eyed aliens. They could look a lot like us. They could look more like something else they evolved from. Who knows? But as a filmmaker, Eric, does this, I don't know, tweak your imagination and make you want to go make a movie about aliens?
I think that that universe is so, you know, saturated with, you know, amazing films and characters and, you know, The Martian, even, you know, going to Mars. And, you know, it's one of those things where I think that's kind of been done. Not to say more stuff can't be done. That's amazing. But, you know, I'll leave that to somebody else.
Yeah.
But Eric, come on. Ultra Cool Dwarf Star has to be at least a good album name, right?
Well, I've already started jotting down notes for a script.
Oh, okay, good.
Good. Good.
All right, let us know how that goes. And Bill, you got all the space guns we need. We'll be fine.
Yeah. And I'll make a Lord of the Rings styled dwarf costume, but I'll make him like a rock star. He'll be an ultra cool dwarf star.
Oh, Gimli, the ultra cool dwarf star.
Yeah.
Well done.
Nice.
Turn one of his axes into a guitar.
Yeah.
This is all the trappings of the next Hollywood hit.
Yep.
I'm just curious to see who joins the list of people who want to go.
I'd go.
That we'll never see again. Put Trump on there, will you?
I would go. Listen, I would totally get on a thing and go, but I would have to be, give me another 20 years or something here.
Yeah, but you'd be dead by the time you're 40 light years away. So that's what, 40
yeah,
years?
Yeah, we're going to need a wormhole to get you there by
that's
that
true.
Point.
That's true. We don't have the cryogenics yet to put me in a tube and put me to sleep. But
you're going to get there and you're going to find out that those NASA mock-ups were not, these are all just like dead brown rocks and you're going to be so disappointed.
Yeah, that'd be a bummer. Although, you know, I'm a big fan of the dead brown rock motif. I like me some Tatooine.
That's true. You're from Utah. You'll be like, home.
Yeah, I'm at home, everybody. It's like Southern Utah.
The thing you really need to remember, though, is that 40 light years means a 40-year lag for playing World of Warcraft. That's kind of hard to deal with.
Yeah, I'm not sure they've got servers ready to
go. They need a local server.
Yeah.
So my thing is Mars, though. Like whenever you hear Elon Musk say, I'll go to Mars and that's where I'll live out my life and help set up the beginnings of things there and just die there. I'd do that. I think I'd go to Mars. Because that's not going to take what? How long did that take, Tom? Do me the math. It's like
a few months.
Well, you're talking about months. It depends on where we are in relation to each other. But yeah, it's usually measured in months.
Yeah, it's not so bad. I could chill, play cards, whatever. I can make use of those couple of months. It's fine.
Yeah.
Used to take people
at most a couple of years.
Yeah, I'll let you guys know how it goes.
Well, so you might be able to play Civ 5.
Yeah,
Tom's
just gonna wait a while between turns, but it's fine.
You know, Joe Rogan did a comedy special called Triggered, where he talks about people going to star travel and going to different planets and inhabiting them, and it's absolutely hysterical. Mm. Like the people that want to go. They have no friends ever. I mean, I can't do the stand-up routine justice, but you guys should check out Triggered.
It's on Netflix, right? Isn't it on Netflix? I think I saw it there.
It's on Netflix, yeah.
Yeah. All right, I'll check it out.
All right. Meanwhile, the eSight 3 is a headset that uses external cameras, some high-resolution displays, and optical prisms to present video in a way that users with low vision can see. So this isn't one of those accessibility devices that requires, you know, electrodes to be put on the brain or anything like that. It's just using visible light, a little bit of technology, you put it on somebody's head, and for instance, people with macular degeneration or sight loss from diabetes complications who have a little bit of sight left, have this thing adjust and show them a picture that they can see. They are the most likely to benefit from eSight 3. Anyone with sight loss has a better than 50% chance of this working, and the wearer uses a connected controller to adjust the image and make it work for them. So this is one of those rare cases where it's a practical thing that people will be able to try out. Like, it's easy to just go in and see if it's going to work for you.
Yeah, I know some people in my personal life who are 100% blind. They can't see anything. But most of the people that have sight issues that I know are partially blind on some part of the spectrum. This seems like this could be really useful.
It's incredible because my grandfather had macular degeneration. And as you know, he lived till he was 98. So those last 5, 6, 7, 8 years, it was really hard for him to see anything without it being a millimeter from his nose. Yeah. So this kind of thing is really exciting. I mean, it's just basically like a pair of glasses. You put them on and you adjust them and you can see. That's pretty incredible for people that are in that state right now.
So. Yeah. Yeah. That stuff affects a lot more people than you think too. There's so many people with that. I know people with early macular degeneration in their 30s and they're looking at blindness by, you know, 40 or 45. Imagine if we can get this technology to a place where they could immediately just plop this thing on and, you know, they're back in business. That'd be amazing. I mean, to me, it's just no different than like a modern equivalent of what eyeglasses did back in the day when they were innovative and new.
Right.
So
I think Bill should work on a Geordi visor case.
Oh. Dude. I think if you make it sexy like the Tesla cars, then it'll really catch on.
Yeah.
Bring that visor thing back from Next Generation.
Or make it RoboCop helmet.
Oh, there you better. Go.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Please drop your weapon. Up. Yeah. I love that idea. We could all be Officer Murphy and cause all sorts of havoc wherever we go. But
And serve you up vision.
It's really cool. One of my favorite things to talk about on the show are these medical innovations. We get them once in a while and it's like, oh, look what they're doing with artificial limbs, or look what's happening with sight enhancement and hearing enhancement. And I feel like we're on the cusp of some stuff. I just hope that, I don't know, the right research and money and effort continues to go in those directions, because I feel like we're on to something.
Later this year, Blizzard will end support for versions of its games made for Windows XP and Windows Vista. If this starts to bother you, keep in mind Microsoft ended support for XP in 2009 and Vista in 2012. Blizzard will post individual notices for each game once dates are determined, but after support is withdrawn, the games won't work, because these games now that Blizzard makes all check in with servers, right, even if there's a solo way to play like a Diablo.
So in my case, even in Diablo's case, you're right. They still have server stuff, which was very controversial at the time in 2012. But what's interesting is, and we were talking about this on The Instance this morning, which is a show dedicated to Blizzard games. I don't know that I've ever heard of a company giving as much leeway and time to older, aging, and also unsupported by their makers platforms than this. So the fact that they're giving this as much due diligence as possible and said, all right, well, official Microsoft support ended in 2009 and 2012. We're doing it later this fall, so they're still even giving us a little bit of time. What really stuck out to me, though, is that somebody someplace is still playing World of Warcraft or Hearthstone or what something on an XP box, which blows my mind.
Well, they're probably in a cafe in China in a lot of cases.
Probably. I hadn't thought of that. That's actually a really good point. They didn't come up today in today's discussion. But it just seemed like, are these just holdouts? Are these people who just never want to upgrade anything because they're happy with what they have? Or is the game even running on an XP box? Or are they running new hardware with XP for some old reason? And I couldn't get my head around it, but I think it's nice that they'd let it go as long as they have.
Yeah, it's Apple should learn from them. You know, they built this great program called Final Cut Pro and then abandoned it.
Let me ask you.
And left a whole generation of editors that learned how to edit on their software to have to scramble to learn something else. So
yeah, let me ask you that. Actually, I have a question about that. So this came up on Tom's other show, Daily Tech News Show, on Wednesday, dailytechnewsshow.com, everybody, where we talked about my experience lately with Apple has been as an artist. I've got a big Wacom over here. I've had one forever. They've always catered so much to creatives and artists. And it feels in the last couple of years anyway, maybe the last 5 or 6 years, it's felt like maybe it's not that they're moving away from it as much as they're not prioritizing it as much as they used to, or at least recognizing it and saying there is a big creative force who use our products. Therefore, we're going to support them and be ahead of the curve that way. And it seems to be changing hands a little bit. And Microsoft's sort of stepping up to the plate with touchscreens and, you know, their own creative Surface studio unit thing that they're selling now. And I wonder, from a filmmaker's perspective, as all of you have kind of had to either shift from Final Cut to Premiere or something else, are you feeling not necessarily abandoned, but are you feeling that sense of like, well, they don't care about this part of my life as much as they used to?
Yeah, because I've been a Mac guy, bought a Mac in college to learn editing in Final Cut Pro. And then I have 4 or 5 Macs since then, laptops, towers, you know, 4 or 5 versions of the iPhone, iPods. So now I feel like my loyalty has been discarded almost, because, you know, they're taking away all these great features. They took away the matte screens. So they have the glossy screens that have those terrible reflections, and, you know, they're taking away all the ports on the side of the computer, and they're really, you know, they took away Final Cut Pro. And again, that's just like I said before, that's what I learned on. That's how I learned to edit, was with Final Cut Pro. So for them to abandon Final Cut Pro 7 and redo the whole interface and make it more, consumer friendly, I felt really betrayed because, you know, you have to scramble to learn another program and it's really frustrating and disheartening. So,
yeah, that's a good, it's an interesting perspective. I know it doesn't have much to do with this article, but when you and I were talking about it, Tom, it made me,
it's the same principle, which is like, how long do you support a small part of your audience, right? To Apple's way of thinking these days, where they can sell a ton of devices is to enterprise situations as sort of workstation replacements. We don't have workstations anymore in a lot of businesses. You have laptops, and Apple wants companies to buy laptops. So they want to make laptops that are perfect for that average user that doesn't need all that power, but they're leaving behind the professionals who want that power. Whereas Blizzard, what they were doing was saying, okay, we've got a small segment of our audience that's still on XP and Vista. When Microsoft ended support, they very easily could have justified, we're going to end support as well, but they decided to keep going for as long as they could. In a lot of ways, it's probably because of those cafes out in China and other parts of Asia that have stayed on XP for a long time. But at a certain point, you just got to cut it and say, you know what? There just aren't enough of you anymore.
Yeah. Bill, do you you use a lot of 3D software, Macromedia stuff and that sort of thing? Not Macromedia. What do they call them?
Autodesk.
Yeah, I meant Autodesk.
Autodesk?
I meant Autodesk. That's who I meant. You do a ton of work with
those
guys. He
listens to MIDI files on his iPod.
Exactly. Playing Doom 2. I know how it is. Are you, I mean, you're probably subject to this. If something big change comes, you might have to upgrade or change the way you do stuff with software or hardware, right?
I do, all the Autodesk stuff that we have runs on Mac or Windows, and it's just like the Creative Cloud for, Premiere or for Adobe. It'll run on either system. You just log in, download whatever it wants for that computer, and it works fine for now, but we're running whatever the newest Mac OS's and whatever the newest Windows, I don't even know what they're called. We have those. So we just pay to stay on the whatever the new thing is. And then we don't have headaches.
That's good. I like that you don't even know what operating system you're using half the time, because that means you're purely creating. You're just focused on creating.
This one tells me it's El Capitan.
Oh, you're not on Sierra.
Oh, you're behind.
Is that the new one?
Yeah.
Well, should I push the software update button right now?
Not now.
Yeah, sure. I'd be looking to rock, right? Yeah.
We're going to lose you, Bill.
Yeah, this can't be a bad idea. I'm sure it's perfectly fine.
Yeah, go update your Windows 10 anniversary update at the same time.
Sure.
Yeah. Nothing will happen.
I just say hats off to Blizzard for being considerate of the players. They always have been. And I think this is just another sign that they're willing to support it as long as they can, but don't expect in a year from now, your load of Hearthstone or Heroes of the Storm to still run properly on a Windows XP or Vista machine.
Warner Brothers has announced that they have ended support as Ben Affleck as director of Batman. No, it's overstating it. Warner Brothers has announced that Matt Reeves will direct the next solo Batman movie. Reeves directed Cloverfield, Let Me In, Dawn of the Planet of the Apes, a bunch of other movies. Interestingly, in this announcement, they didn't mention Ben Affleck. So people reading tea leaves are trying to make something out of that. I don't know if it means anything or not. We assume that he will still be playing Batman.
Yeah, as far as we know, that didn't change. Do you, Eric, do you know anything about how this stuff works and whether or not this means anything dire for not having him as Batman?
No, I don't. I don't think that they're going to get rid of Ben at this point. And you know what? I'm going to go out on a limb, and he's been my favorite cinematic Batman.
Really?
I love that suit. I loved his physicality. I loved his presence. And you know, I'm looking forward to him continuing as Batman. I really am. And I might be in the minority there, but,
I think you're actually onto something, and I'm with you. I'm in the camp of he might be my favorite cinematic Batman, but he was in my least favorite cinematic Batman movie. So I really, really disliked that last movie, but I liked his Batman. It was my favorite part of it.
Yeah, it's interesting. I saw that movie 4 times in the theater, 3 times at the Chinese Man here in LA.
Wow.
In IMAX. And, you know, I'm a giant Superman fan and I love Batman and I didn't hate it. There were things about it I absolutely hated, but it was, you know, a good, hey, let's get the ball rolling with Justice League and the rest of the DC universe. So yeah. I'm excited to see what they do.
Yeah, I'm too. Bill,
I'm right there with Batfleck. I liked him a lot.
Yeah.
He was cool. Actually, the Batman Superman movie, it'd be cool to see a version of that where it was mostly told just from Batman's perspective and we hardly get any of the Superman in it. Mm-hmm. And then you know at the end, they duke it out.
Yeah,
That's a good point. I like Henry Cavill a lot. I really do. I just hate the way that they write him.
Yeah.
And they're just, he's so grumpy and mopey and, you know, just make it a little bit more fun. You know, he's the Man of Steel. He's got to lighten up a little bit.
I appreciate you.
Maybe death will bring him. Right. Come on.
What was that?
I said, your planet blew up a long time ago, Cal. Yeah. Get over it. Move on.
Man.
I like how you said that. I'm glad that you said that because I really like Henry Cavill as Superman. He embodies the character in so many ways, but the writing is bad. And it's hard for an average audience member to distinguish between the two. They just think, oh, well, he's a bad Superman. But he's got all the potential in the world, the perfect everything about him, except for the way they've decided to write him. So Justice League may change all that. Wonder Woman may change all that. Like, there's real opportunity in the DC side for stuff to really kick off, and let's hope this Batman movie's part of it.
It's funny. I had an argument with somebody the other day that said he didn't have any charisma or screen presence, and I'm like, you know, he's not, you know, charming enough. And I said, did you see that remake that he just did? The 60 spy series that they just remade.
I Spy? A Man from U.N.C.L.E.
Man from U.N.C.L.E.,
that's it, yeah.
Incredibly charming and dapper and terrific in that movie. And I'm like, give him more of that in these movies. And then you've got something.
Yeah, we need more the heart of Christopher Reeve.
And the lightheartedness of it a little bit too.
Yeah,
it would be like judging John Hamm only on Mad Men. And saying like, well, he's just dour and he can't be funny. You know, like we know that's not true.
Yeah. Once you get to see him in other ways, you go, oh, okay, this is cool. But well, I guess I'm hopeful about it. I wanted to ask Bill though, has any of the DC, you've made Iron Man stuff before.
Mm-hmm.
Has any of the DC stuff intrigued you? Like the suit that Batman's got is so like armored and cool in this last one.
The Batman armor suit from the last Superman Batman movie. I think most people can agree that thing was extraordinary. Yeah. I got to see it at Comic-Con. Yeah. There's just something really cool. Like, he's the Dark Knight, and that armor makes him look like a knight.
Yeah.
And it looks really cool.
Yeah. Any desire to make it? Like, reproduce it?
So much desire. so much desire.
I should have asked, do you have any time or bandwidth? Probably not.
No, I just got back from Weta Workshop, so I want to make a dwarf costume now. Mm. So that's kind of taken over.
Yeah.
But yeah, you need to make an ultra cool dwarf star first.
I like your thinking.
I have to say, I got to speak up. Christian Bale is still my favorite bat. I'll be the lone voice.
Are you sure about that? Batman. Are you sure? But did you like the way he talked?
My number two. I loved him too.
The one thing I'll say is, I think Affleck is definitely my favorite Bruce Wayne, bar none. Maybe Michael Keaton was my number two, but. I've never felt like Christian Bale's Bruce Wayne or a lot of the Bruce Waynes really were matched up to the level. Like, they put all their focus into the Batman, and I think Ben Affleck was for the first time. I'm like, oh yeah, that guy feels like Bruce Wayne. That's what Bruce Wayne would be like.
Yeah, I feel like they were missing the perfect portrayal, and it just hasn't happened yet. And the reason I say that is because my two favorites are Adam West and Ben Affleck, Bruce Wayne. Now, if that's my only two that I like, there's something missing in the middle. So they need to figure that out. Maybe this new Batman movie will do it. I think that Matt Reeves is entirely capable of making a very compelling, fun action movie. So I have a lot of faith in that guy. I really like Dawn of Planet of the Apes. I still haven't seen Cloverfield for some reason. I don't know what
that, you've got his directorial prowess, but you've got a script that's been, you know, Ben Affleck's been working on, and you can't discount Ben Affleck's skills as a director and a storyteller as well. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he was writing a script with Geoff Johns, and I just read that they're very happy with where that is. And that's been through a lot. They didn't just rush it, which bodes well for the franchise.
Yeah, I agree.
And Alan Tudyk is my favorite Van Wayne.
Oh, I see what you did there.
I'm the only person watching Powerless.
I knew what you were talking about. Very well done.
All right. Finally, Sci-Fi's Cosplay Melee premieres March 21st. It'll pit four contestants each week against each other to compete, creating full costumes and character origin stories to dazzle a panel of judges. At the end of each episode, the winner will walk away with $10,000, and it's being hosted by Yvette Nicole Brown. You might know her from Community.
All right, Bill, it's your turn. Yeah. You need to tell me what You must be losing your mind. This must be an awesome, exciting thing for you to have this on TV.
Yes, it is. It's weird. There's been at least one other attempt to take cosplay to the masses through television, and the last attempt, at least people in the community seem to think it wasn't so great. Mm. But I'm eternally optimistic, so I think this could be cool. Mm. Basically, they're trying to make it a lot like Face Off, and people seem to love Face Off.
So yeah, it's like Project Runway meets Face Off.
Yeah, exactly. Except you got to build a crazy demon costume or whatever. Mm. I actually had an opportunity. I have no idea how much of my advice they put into the show, but early on when they were developing it, I had talked to the producers as sort of a consultant. So hopefully, another reason why I'm optimistic. Mm. They're reaching out to people in the community to get advice on what the cosplay community would like to see versus, you know, the world at large.
So how do they choose people? Why aren't you in this? Because I want you to be in this. Why aren't you in this?
I actually auditioned to be a judge.
Nice.
They did not pick me.
They didn't pick you?
Nah. It's all right. It's fine. One of the judges. The other one is my friend Leanna, and she's super cool. Mm. So she'll be up there. And plus a whole bevy of other cosplayers that you may have heard of or may not, but are going to be on there. And I can speak for a fact that these are really awesome, really skilled people, and they will be pushed to their creative limits on the show.
And
so
you're
that's what I'm really like.
Real world cosplay. Right. This will be.
Yeah, really.
It's cosplay.
What happens when they all get in an apartment?
You know what's funny? It's like, where was this show when I was in the reality TV world? I have worked on so many reality TV shows as an editor and a producer.
Oh, I'm so glad you're here. I got to ask you questions about that then, because we can't not have you on here. Okay, so we've talked about this on the show before. We've had a couple of people who were on actual reality shows and stuff. What do you think the chances of this cosplay show not being edited for drama? You know what I'm talking about? Like they
I think there's zero chance for that.
Yeah, you want it to be interesting, right?
Yeah.
That's they manufacture so much stuff. Mm. And they call it reality TV, but it really is the farthest thing from reality, because otherwise if it was just reality TV, you're just walking around filming people and, you know, you have to cobble something together. But this is a show that's very structured. So they're going to have segments. Oh, you have this challenge, you have this challenge, you have this challenge. And then you'll interview. The interviews are the most interesting part, because when you cut to somebody sitting in an interview in a chair, a lot of the times in my experience working on shows that I've worked on, I sign NDAs, so I'm not naming them, but you can look it up on IMDb.
Sure.
We would write their bites for them. Mm. We would tell them what to say, and then they would go in and basically read it and recite it with as much, you know, naturalism as they could. So I think that this show is going to be heavy on drama. I think it's going to be, I think it's going to be a lot like Project Runway, which is heavy on drama. And, you know, you've got the interesting sci-fi aspect. So, you know, that looks like a fun show to work on.
Did you ever have anybody like object? Like they would put together dialogue for somebody to read in those interview segments. And you can always tell on shows like Pawn Stars or something, you're like, okay, well, you just read that off a card or whatever. But the ones who do that, have you ever had anybody go, I'm not reading this. This is totally not like me or something.
Yes. I've seen, there's been some reality stars who can't speak the English language very well. Mm. So you would write something and they'd be like, I'm not saying that, and they would say it in their own, you know, simplified version of it. Mm. So yes,
that's fascinating.
There have been those instances.
I find that fascinating. That work is so weird to me. I always hear about people who work in it where.
Oh, it's awful. It's truly awful.
Do you guys ever watch the show with Alton Brown, the Kitchen
Nightmares?
No,
crap. Kitchen Confidential.
The one where it's a competition Kitchen? Show. It's basically the same thing.
Oh, well,
think of it.
It's where he judges people. Well, that's what that channel is, either people judging people or Guy Fieri eating stuff.
Is it
right?
The show where people make food and people judge whether it's good?
That's the one. Except they give them, they compete and they have to bid against sabotages for one another.
Cutthroat Kitchen.
There it is.
That chat room got it. Not right. Me.
Well done.
I imagine that this cosplay show will end up similarly to that one where each character gets introduced and they're like, they have a quirk or a story that they just like hammer on. Mm. But I imagine a lot of the drama will come from them trying to accomplish something technically challenging in an incredibly short period of time with limits. Like you can't use X materials, or if you can't use a certain technique or tool or something like that. Yeah. That's what I predict.
That's what a lot of those food shows do. They're like, okay, you've got this challenge. Oh, it's super easy, except you can't use knives.
Mm. Well, oh my gosh.
Mm. Yeah.
And then what's the point? How is that real?
Yeah.
Because you really can't use knives.
So the scenario here is that if they're working on a mask or something, let's say a latex mask, and they're told they can't do certain tricks that maybe some people do to be done quicker or to fake through it or whatever. And my thinking is, all right, that makes sense as a rule. But if it's a rule, then most of the time, like 9 times out of 10 in a competition, people are going to just follow the rules and then let the best man win. It seems like in a reality show, the producers are going to want somebody to try to do a shortcut, and it's going to be all artificially picked who does it. It'll be whoever's been deemed the villain because he's got a funny look in his eye. So he's the villain for the season, and we're going to have him use fast drying latex instead of the stuff you're supposed to use. And boom, there's your drama. Like, that'll probably happen, right, Eric? Like, someone's going to make somebody do something to piss off the other creators.
That's what these shows do. And you know, majority of the shows I'm talking about, and I haven't worked on this one, so I can say it, Real Housewives, all that stuff. And I know people that have worked on that show. That's all set up. That is all, you know, predetermined before they go on set and they start shooting. This is the gist of what we want you to do. Go do it. Go be you and make this moment. They're gonna make a whole show about one woman shushing another woman. I mean, it's just so fucking banal. Excuse my language. I just have a really, I worked in reality for so long. I'm so happy to be out of it. Yeah. I never want to go back.
I think this is a great perspective to have, because I don't feel like we've ever had anybody on who's had to directly deal with this. It's crazy.
I think a good technique, I think if you really want to win one of these competitions when you're going in, is to invent your own story. So like if you watch Cutthroat Kitchen and someone comes up and they're like, oh, I'm so-and-so and I'm just fighting to hopefully win some money and save a animal shelter or some sort of really like heart pulling story. Mm-hmm. There's your winner. The other guy's like, I'm a jerk and I hope I can get all this money taken to Vegas. Whee! Yeah. You're like, well, he can't win.
Unless it's a show where they're going to have a guaranteed second season. And part of that is the defending champion has to defend their title. Then the jerk will win the first season.
So Stefan steal the peas?
There you
will go. Will he still win the championship? Yeah, totally.
It really annoys me, because not that I was naive enough to think any of this stuff was real, but I like Amazing Race and things where it's mostly competition, and that's what I'm looking forward to here. So to sum it up, I think that this will work for me if that's where they focus, is the craft, and spend more time with that maybe. The makeup show that was on there was pretty good about that. What was that called? Face Off?
Face Off.
That was all right with the competition stuff, less drama, more competition. So we might get lucky here, and it'll be less backbiting and less constructed and more, you know.
And to your point, you know, as long as they're not doing anything that's going to hinder the outcome of the work and make these people, you know, look stupid or make their, you know, costumes less effective than they could be, that's what I hope that they don't do. That would be tragic.
Yeah,
I will say that with a lot of the technical challenges that come into building these kind of costumes and props, I feel like they won't have to try hard to make like time be an issue, because a lot of times if you're really down to the wire on a build like that, any mess up whatsoever means like, oh, I used the wrong resin. It should cure in 10 minutes. This stuff cures in 90 minutes. I goofed up. There's already enough of an uphill battle to even finish these things, put a time limit on it. And I think they'll have fertile ground for plenty of drama that just sort of naturally built in.
Well, yeah.
Network is it on?
Sci-fi.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. March 21st. So it's not very far off, guys. Watch for it. Coming up soon. Hey, I want to thank everybody who submits stories. We always get great ones. And big part of that is because people submit them. Tom, who gave us stories this week?
Well, yeah, in addition to our fine guests, Eric and Bill both gave us a couple of stories. We got stories from The Max, Gatekeeper, and I Am Sci-Fi. at currentgeek.reddit.com. Big thanks to everybody who submits stories over there, because it helps us figure out what to talk about here on the show.
All right. We always like to take a minute before we jump into the pod quiz and let our guests tell us about the kind of projects they're working on these days. Bill, let's start with you. What do you got going right now? There's always a billion things, but tell us more about you and Punish Props.
We were just in New Zealand, which was awesome. Mm. Super cool. So we have some vlog type videos up on the wonderful country down there. But while we were there, we did a video collaboration with one of our friends who works on his own YouTube channel, building props and costumes. His name is Andrew DFT. And we did a collaboration. So we each built our own space gun from Destiny, like you do. And then while we were there, we traded the unpainted guns. And now I'm painting his gun and he's painting mine.
Whoa.
Yeah.
You guys.
So we did a video this earlier this week showing the building process. And then next week we'll each do a video showing the painting process.
Wow. Very nice. And this is up on punishedprops.com. You can also go to the channel and see it. Looks like.
Yep. YouTube.com/punishedprops.
Oh, that's so cool.
And YouTube.com/AndrewDFT.
Nice.
How did you get in touch with them? How did you guys become friends? How did you figure out your collaboration?
Little thing called the internet.
Well, I was going to guess that.
Were you mutual, fans of each other? Yeah. Mutual fans of each other's YouTube channels. We do a live stream every week where we take questions from our audience, and we've had him on as a guest before. And then we were planning a trip to New Zealand anyway, and we figured it'd be really fun. So we went and checked out his shop. We got to like see how he does what he does. We traded guns like one does in a foreign country.
Yeah. Drove on the wrong side of the road, looks like. All that stuff.
We did.
Yeah. How'd that go? Any no issues? Everyone was fine?
I did not do any driving. I was chauffeured by my friend Chris, who is a lovely human.
Oh, that's very nice.
Good man, Chris.
Yeah, good man.
Good on you.
Sweet. Again, punishprops.com. Check it out over there. And we'll talk more about Twitter and that stuff at the end of the show. Eric Dow, tell us a little bit about yourself, what you got going on these days.
Well, I just finished producing and editing and overseeing post-production on Shallow Water, which is a film by one of your previous guests, Sandy Calora. Mm. So we were working on that for the last 6 months or so. So that's getting pretty close to being wrapped up. And right now I'm actually sitting in front of a monitor. I'm editing some TV spots for the upcoming Kennedy family miniseries called After Camelot.
Oh, cool.
So doing some TV spots about that. And then I'm also developing a couple of things. I'm talking to special effects legend Steve Johnson about doing a documentary about his career and his wild antics. His book just came out, Rubberhead, which is pretty wild. If you haven't read it, you should pick it up or check out the audiobook, which was a lot of fun to record. He's so crazy. Mm. But besides that, yeah, just got some stuff, working on developing and trying to stay busy.
Very nice. I'm looking at your IMDb page. Cool stuff on here. Everybody, you should go check it out. I love that hat you're wearing. You look like a Navy SEAL or something there.
That was on the set of Shallow Water. Yeah. And the rain and the, yeah.
That looks gnarly. Very cool.
If somebody hasn't heard of Steve Johnson, what is one anecdote you would say to give them the flavor of what they could expect?
Yeah.
There are several in that book. I mean, it's a really incredible read, but I think the funniest one was he insults Rob Bottin pretty harshly. And basically the story goes, they were working on The Howling, and they were up, the two of them at the shop late one night, and Rob was plying Steve with stiff drinks, Jack and Coke, I believe it was. And Steve thought Rob was matching him drink for drink, but Rob was just drinking Coke. So by the end of the evening, Steve was hammered, and Rob, basically says, "So Steve, what do you think about me?" And he's like, "Really?" And he's just like the suffering, succotash drunk guy. The way he reads it in the audiobook is hilarious. And he just basically says, "I think you're narcissistic, sociopathic, asshole, and you're a terrible boss." And he's like, "Really? Wow. That's enough, I guess." It's just Steve being Steve. And, if you have a chance to check out his book, I highly recommend it for the fans of the of the genre stuff that he's done and all that. And it's just giant personality too.
It sounds awesome.
And Rob Bottin, if people don't realize, is an Academy Award winning makeup and hairstyling artist.
Yeah.
That's amazing. All right. Well, cool. Well, it's always good to hear what our guests are up to, and it's always sounding like fun stuff. Real quick before we do our pop quiz, a reminder that you can support the show in a very unique and interesting way. We have what we call a crate joy. It's a Frog Pants crate joy, and in it is a bunch of stuff. It's like a box. You get it every month. You're familiar with monthly boxes? Well, they come to your door, and inside are cool, nerdy things. Well, the unique thing here is it's stuff we make, sometimes our guests make. Tom makes. Look at this little print Tom's got. Look, he's got a USB charger hanging there. He's got that poster print, a book. Look at that. It's a supplemental thing that for your Citadel 32 book. Look at that. Current Geek shot glass. Oh, my gosh. The swag never ends. I don't know how you have all this handy. Mine's so far away, I can't reach it. But anyway, it's super cool.
I moved it nearby.
Okay. Super cool, easy to do. And all you got to do is go to frogpants.cratejoy.com. So that's CRATEjoy.com. And sign up. It's a great way to support the show. We really appreciate those who do. And if you haven't, consider it. That's frogpants.cratejoy.com.
America scores and wins.
Okay, that music means it's time for me to figure out why I can't reduce the volume. There we go. Hey, we're going to have a little pop quiz. And the pop quiz is a chance for us to quiz our guests in areas of their expertise. I don't think either of them in this case know what their questions are because Hammond has got a real treat lately of not telling people anything about what they're going to be. So this should be fun. Let's start with Eric, since you're the new guy here. When you get an answer right, you're going to hear this. When you get it wrong, you'll hear this. And Tom's going to score the whole thing. He's real weird about that. Don't be frightened by it. Sometimes
you say that.
Sometimes it's in your advantage that he's so weird about the way he scores.
Tom, I just want to say, I think you're a very handsome guy and very articulate.
See?
Thank you. Thank you. And that will not affect the way the rules are interpreted, but I do appreciate it.
And by the way, when I said Pawn Stars earlier, I had no idea. I just wanted to put that out there. I had no idea
you
worked on Pawn Stars.
Until this is I looked not at your Pawn Stars.
No, it's not. But when I looked at IMDb, I went, "Oh, he worked on Pawn Stars," and I was just talking about Pawn Stars. Anyway, let's get to your questions.
Good that you brought it back up again, Scott.
Yeah, I'm glad. So it never came out exactly. Your trivia, which has changed on the times that you weren't here, but has now locked in. It is now Rocky trivia. Rocky.
All right, let's do this.
You're a big fan, I understand. So
that's Stallone's the reason I got into the business.
Oh, very nice.
Since I was a little kid, I've been so inspired by those films, and you know. Well, so yeah, let's do it.
He is the law. All right, here we go. What is the name of the loan shark that Rocky works for when he is not boxing?
Mr. Gazzo.
Oh my gosh, you're so fast.
Bonus half even... point.
Yeah, that was really quick. Well done. Next question. How much money does the promoter say Rocky will get for facing Apollo Creed?
I think it was 40,000.
You are incorrect. $150,000, it says here.
No, but it's correct. He thought it was 40,000.
So oh, you know what it was?
What?
No, that I think that's what he cleared after taxes in the second one.
Oh, maybe he's got this wrong.
Say net or gross, Scott?
Yeah. Yeah, no, the total. Yeah, I think he signs on for 150,000 in the first one, but he nets like something like 40.
All right. You may be right. Well, Tom gave you the point, so this is good. Next question. Mickey begins training Rocky in the movie. What weight class did Mickey fight in when he was boxing?
He's a middleweight.
It says here bantamweight, but I don't know my boxing stuff. So is that
he's just a little guy,
a little tiny dude.
That's a great. I don't know that one. That's a good one.
All right, there you go, Tom. Just anything special there? We're just that's just wrong. All right, next question.
I mean, you lose a point for not knowing the difference between bantam and middleweight.
You should see my negative points. It's amazing. Apollo Creed announces he's going to hold a boxing match during what event or celebration?
He's going to hold the match is going to be on this date or when he announced it?
On the date. He's going to hold the match during a very specific big celebrated event.
This is New Year's Eve.
You are close, but
New Year's Day.
Incorrect. It is the United States Bicentennial.
Now, oh, okay.
Is he talking about Rocky?
Well, wait a minute.
II?
No, that's not right.
That's Rocky II, isn't it?
They're just celebrating the Bicentennial.
But not on the date.
Not on the date, no.
All right, Tom, weigh in here.
Yeah, he gets a full point for confusing the heck out of people with the wrong question.
Good job, Mike. I got a guy named Mike writing these. All right, final question. How many rounds does the fight between Rocky...
15.
Oh, my Lord. Let me double check. Yep, 15 is the correct
answer. That's a half-point speed bonus for sure.
Oh, Bill, I don't know, buddy. You're going to... It's going to be a challenge here. All right, well, let me lay yours on you. Your topic, sir, is Star Wars Episode 4.
Oh, that's a good one.
Yeah, you like the...
I'm glad it wasn't 3
or 2 or 1 or anything prior to 4, really. yeah, when he first asked for it, when he first said, hey, I want it to be episode 4, I asked
Mike... You know what? I'm ready now. I got my lights.
Oh, you're good? Okay, good. You're all set. Oh, look at that. So, yeah. Isn't that, was that the one that blinks and stuff?
It does not blink.
Careful where you point that. You don't want to accidentally turn it on.
Yeah, right through your face.
All right, I'm ready.
Here you go. First question. What is the name of the bartender in Mos Eisley Cantina that doesn't want R2 and 3PO to come inside?
Oh, no.
And, and by the way, the request from Hammond was that these questions be hard episode 4
they
questions.
Are. Yeah. I don't know. I know the name of the band.
What's the name of the band?
The Modal Nodes. Figuring Dan and the Modal Nodes. But I don't know the bartender.
I'm impressed with your knowledge of the Modal Nodes. However, the bartender's name was Wuher. It's W-U-H-E-R.
I did not know that.
Yeah.
So you get a full point for Modal Nodes, lose a half point for not knowing the actual question.
All right. It's not bad. Still a half point ahead. Vader chokes a fool in a meeting room. What is the name of this character that gets choked?
Oh, was that Nida?
You are incorrect. The answer is Admiral Moti or Motti.
Moti. Yeah. All right.
He's chokes the one that's. Fool. They're the ones that are sitting around there.
Did you just make that up?
They're they're in the conference room, right? Just the little. It's the one where he does the first choke, and it's pretty awesome.
Yeah, it's challenging because I mean, I'm not complaining about the questions, but these are never mentioned in the movie.
Yeah, that's true. This is all extended stuff. You have to know from later. Next question.
That's fine. I should have read up. It's fine.
Yeah, get that extended fiction going. All right, what docking bay on the Death Star does the Millennium Falcon get pulled into? And this was said in the movie.
This was. Oh man, these are brutal. I'm just gonna guess a number with let's say 3. Docking bay 3.
Docking bay 327.
Ah, it was close.
Okay, so you get a third of a point.
All right,
for a third of the number.
All right, what was Anakin's?
I should have guessed that the Death Star had a lot more than single digit. Yeah. Docking bays. It probably got more than that.
They probably started at 100 or something. Who knows? What was Anakin's occupation, according to Luke's uncle, Uncle Owen?
He was a talented starfighter.
You are incorrect. He was a navigator on a spice freighter. It was all about spices and how they had
spice
to flow.
Spice freighter, that's right.
Yeah.
But I mean, he was a talented starfighter. Well, so, sure. And those words are used to describe him. So we're going to give you a half point.
All right, not bad. Boy, you're getting some love from the judges tonight. Final question. What is the number of the cell on the Death Star where Princess Leia was being held?
1137.
You are incorrect. The answer is 2187.
2187.
It's also Finn's stormtrooper number in The Force Awakens.
There's that. 1187. Why am I thinking 1187?
I don't know.
That's THX.
THX. The movie THX is what you're thinking.
That's what I was thinking.
Yeah. Which is, you know... I'm not scoring this, but that's pretty good that you pulled
that out. That's 1183.
Oh, it is? Okay.
All right. It was 1138 was what I was thinking of.
All right. Well, well done.
THX 1138.
Well done. But now we got to find out if any of this is any good. So, Tom, how'd they do? Who won?
Well, listen. Iceworm did not do Bill any favors. So I'm going to say 1.733 repeating is a pretty damn good score considering. Mm. But you got to give it to Eric with the 5 points.
Yes. Well done.
By the way, I'm looking it up here. Rocky tells Gazzo that he made 37 grand after taxes, but you're right. It was 150,000.
Oh, all right. Well, see, and not only did you win, but you won in our hearts now too. It's that you've won both places. Well done. good job, everybody. That concludes today's pop quiz. Let's dive right into forecast.
The future promises even more startling things to come.
Here on the show, we attempt to predict the future occasionally. We call it forecast, spelled F-O-U-R cast. We used to have a show named this. Now we have a segment named this. And this week, I'm going to predict the future. Sometimes it's about tech, entertainment. Who knows? Really, all bets are off. It doesn't matter what we're choosing. But I chose technology and cars. And we have been promised hover cars for most of my life.
Well, you say hover cars. You mean like flying cars?
Flying cars, like, hover cars, cars with no tires. Like the the way that they'll move across anywhere will be either through some sort of magnetic rail thing or
levitation.
Levitation, sure. Or some new technology we don't even have yet. And that I don't think is ever going to come. I'm convinced. And part of this comes from I'm watching the new season of The Expanse, which I love with all my soul. And actually thanks to Tom, because I read the books and now way into the show. And they are showing a vast in the future where things are landing on at the UN on Earth with tires. There's a hover jet style spacecraft that lands. It's got tires. The vehicles that they move around in on Mars and on Earth are, straight up tired vehicles. And I'm getting to the point where I don't think I'm ever going to get my hover car. They may be auto-driven by a robot. They might be controllable with my brain. There may be 1,000 other ways that they'll be super science fiction and futury. But I don't know if they'll ever bother with the tire part. They'll just say, it works good enough. You know, maybe they'll be better sealed. They won't pop as easy. They won't, you know, if they hit a nail, nothing happens. Better rubber or something. But a kind of a not broke, don't fix it sort of thing. They're already kind of high-tech in a weird way. So that's my thinking. So it's a weird little offshoot idea, but I'm curious if anyone has any thoughts about the future of how our cars will drive.
The Hyperloop stuff that they've started doing, don't those things technically hover?
They,
I think
they do, but they're like a train, which also there's trains in Japan that technically hover. They're magnetic. Yeah. What do they call that?
Maglev.
There you go.
Yeah.
And so it isn't that the technology doesn't exist. It just only exists in these track type systems.
Ah, I gotcha. Yeah.
And so for you to go to Walmart, you know, in your whatever your car, I just don't think you're ever going to hover there.
I think a lot of it may deal with, like, have you ever driven I haven't driven a real hovercraft before, but I've driven like an RC hovercraft. Mm-hmm. And they're kind of squirrely to control because you'll turn and it'll just keep its momentum going. And I feel like that could be problematic in if everyone on the road had that sort of sloppy turning control versus tires that are like bound to the ground and generally go where you point them.
Yeah.
A little bit of a steeper learning curve on the hovered vehicle.
Thrusters.
Sure.
You know, they have a passenger carrying drone that's going to be launching in Dubai.
E-Hang. Yeah.
That's already happening.
That's pretty awesome. But see, but like a drone.
Does that fit your description, Scott?
No, because, okay, I...
And why? If so, why not?
Eric makes a really good point. I think that what we're going to do is just jump right over the notion that we've all had in our head that we're all in these cars and we're hovering across the street. Like, think of Minority Report when Tom Cruise is in those cars.
Back to the Future.
Sure, another great example. I don't think we ever do that. We jump straight to the drone idea. We will be in, there'll be aircraft at that point. And yeah, they'll come and land and maybe even have our own personal ones and they may be all fully automated, but they're, at the end of the day, they're quadcopters. So they're just going to fly. And that's great, no problem. That sounds good to me. And that's also super futuristic. But this long-held belief that I would be, you know, sand speeder, basically, isn't going to happen.
No land speeders.
Yeah, no land speeders are going to happen. And also, the closest I've been to it, Bill, to make reference to what you said, I've been in one of those, it was in Mississippi, but one of those swamp boats that, I don't know what they're called now that I can't think of them, but they...
Hovercraft, right?
I guess they're hovercraft, yeah.
Yeah,
and
they're full of eels.
And you're right. Like, I tried to take the wheel of one. I was probably 20. And they let me do it. And I couldn't figure out how to control that damn thing. Like, it was just sloshing all over the place. There was no control. So even if we did get down to, the reason tracks work and maglev works is because you got a freaking track and it can't go anywhere but on that one thing, right? But it's not going to happen in a personal car. That's all I'm saying. So I think we all agree in the end.
So maybe flying cars in the form of quadcopters, but no hover cars.
There you go.
Yeah, I think my feeling is not that it won't, like, if you really worked at it, you could figure out the steering issues, you could figure out all these technical problems, but it just won't be worth it because something like what Eric's talking about will come along and people say, well, why would I just hover when I could totally fly from one part of Dubai to another?
Mm-hmm. Until, you know, a bird hits one of the propellers and you go flying into tailspin like Maverick and Goose.
Why didn't I hover?
It was jet wash.
No kidding. All right. Well, this we always like forecast, and we always encourage people at home to send theirs in. In fact, there's an email you can use, currentgeek@gmail.com, and sometimes you just have comments like this one. Connor wrote in and said, "Dear people, I hear Tom got to see Logan. Any chance he can spill the beans here if he liked it or not? Your pal, Connor." Tom, are you out?
I did get a chance to see it.
Are you allowed?
I am not going to spoil it, but I did very much like it.
Okay.
Yay! All right. Now, I've heard someone say that it was the best superhero film ever made.
That is really high praise. But,
I mean, I hesitate to say that just because everybody's got differing opinions, right?
Subjective, of course.
Yeah, it's very subjective, but man, it is both a family story, like a family drama, an action movie, and a superhero movie. Like it's all amazing.
Yeah.
It's all three of those.
I can't wait. I'm so excited. What do we got? Another week before wide release? What is it?
That's one of the things. It's like, oh, well, it's a superhero movie, but it's also a story about the dynamics of a grandfather and an aging man and a daughter, right? Mm-hmm. Even though they're not actually related. But a lot of times when you say that, like, oh, okay, so it's going to be a little bit different, but it's still super action, like great action sequences, great fight sequence. It's I can't say anymore.
Yeah.
As long as they don't make Logan a deadbeat dad like they did make Superman in Superman Returns.
Yeah, no kidding. Yeah, that's
no, exactly. Exactly. No, that's a really good example of where it's like, oh, we're going to try to, you know, put a human story, and then sometimes it doesn't match up.
Yeah. If you do it right, though, it is so the lifeblood of your story. It's so important. Like, I always think of the best Pixar movies. The best Pixar movies always are the ones that have a family element at the core and a bittersweet element of family life, losing a parent or gaining a parent, or what it's like to raise kids, or getting older and what that means, and having to leave younger life behind. I mean, the whole Toy Story arc is based on that. And it's so powerful and effective. And it's some of the best Marvel movies do that really well. They create family, even in dynamics that aren't technically family. So it's really good to hear that dynamic works. I'm excited about that.
Most superhero films are at the core, you know, about family or loss of family. The only character that comes to mind where I don't remember any family being involved was the Incredible Hulk.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, even Deadpool had some family stuff in it.
Yeah.
You know, in that
That's
movie.
Why it came out on Valentine's
That's
Day.
That's right.
Yeah. Heartwarming.
Which was incredible. That was the best movie going Valentine's Day experience I've ever had. Yeah.
I've never heard my wife laugh as hard as she did in that movie. And
same
I was
my girlfriend. I was like, oh, right, she's into this.
Yeah, I was worried. I went in worried thinking, oh, she's going to think this is too whatever. And we're going to have to tell the 16-year-old he can't go yet or whatever.
That movie had me when at the opening credits when they're like, you know, directed by an overpaid douchebag and written by the real heroes. I was like, okay, I'm already loving this.
Yeah, I bet that probably, I don't know, that resonated with you and people like you, I'm guessing.
Story, baby. You got to have a good story.
People on the inside. Well, speaking of the inside, we are now on the outside. We have done this show, and we are so glad you guys are able to join us. Real quick, let's go around the horn. And Bill, give everybody a chance to know where to find you, follow you, and see you on the internet, please.
Awesome. Punishedprops.com is where all of our goodness lives. If you're into prop and costume making, we've got all kinds of tutorials, videos, and books. If you want to bug me on Twitter, it's at Chinbeard. Mm. Because some jerk is sitting on the Bill Duran one. that's about it. Just punishprops.com, look us up on YouTube, and go make something.
You should keep bugging him, because that's how I ended up getting Scott Johnson eventually.
Every couple months, I give him a poke, and he's like, oh, I'm totally going to use it.
Yeah, and then he never does, right?
Just
never does. Well, good luck with that. And Eric, big, huge thanks for being on, man. Anywhere on the internet, people can find you.
Well, you like you already mentioned, IMDb, you can find some of my work history there. You can find me on Facebook personally. You can find my film Behind the Mask, the Batman Dead End Story. We have a Facebook fan page. And also we have a fan page for my very close to my heart documentary, my first film, Honor in the Valley of Tears, which chronicles the story of a Medal of Honor recipient and the men that he trained in the States for 11 months and led into a bloody yet forgotten battle. And that is Honor in the Valley of Tears on Facebook. And as a matter of fact, I'm getting ready to go next month to attend the 50th reunion for A Company. So it's a very special film. And if you have anybody in your family that served or you have an affinity for military, you should check it out.
Yeah, heck yeah, man. That's awesome. Well, cool. Well, you guys were great, great guests. Tom, anything else you'd like to add, sir, before we go?
Just a reminder, if you backed Pilot X on Inkshares, the copies are shipping. A bunch of you have been posting them on Twitter. I love that. Thank you. It's great to see that. And if you did not back it on Inkshares and you want to get a copy, it comes out March 14th. What if a time traveler lived in a world where disrupting the timeline could destroy everything in the universe except himself? That's the story. Sounds good. Go check it out at a bookstore near you.
That sounds good to me. For everything else, make sure you check us out at currentgeek.com. We are Current Geek on Twitter, and we'll be back next. No, not next week. We're out next week, but we were back the week after that to bring you some March goodness. Currentgeek.com, everybody. All the stuff is there for me, for Tom, and our guests. We'll see you next time.
Hi, and welcome back to Legal Geek. This week, we follow up on the news of President Trump's first election to the Supreme Court with an explanation of how the confirmation process works and how it could change. A couple weeks ago, President Trump announced during primetime TV his first election to be nominated to fill Antonin Scalia's seat on the Supreme Court, which has been vacant since Scalia's death in early 2016. Judge Gorsuch is one of the list of 20 or so potential nominees Trump shared as a presidential candidate. He currently serves on the 10th Circuit Court of Appeals in Denver, and ideologically, he would likely fall between the stalwart conservative Justice Thomas and the more recent GOP appointees Chief Justice Roberts and Justice Alito. In other words, fairly close on the spectrum to the justice he would be replacing. In view of this similarity to the justice being replaced and the seemingly pristine resume of judicial experience that Gorsuch brings to the table, it's unclear how hard the Democrats will fight this nomination. Let's discuss how confirmation works for the Supreme Court and some items to watch this time around. Confirmation for Supreme Court justices is very similar to the long stream of cabinet officers and other executive appointees going through the process now for the Trump administration. Gorsuch first meets with members of the Senate Judiciary Committee, who will almost certainly approve the nomination for further consideration. Then the issue must go to a vote, and a simple majority of 51 senators can cause confirmation. However, Supreme Court appointments are subject to filibuster, delay by an opposing party. To stop a filibuster, the Senate needs to vote for cloture, which is defined as a forced immediate vote over any filibuster delay tactic. Cloture requires 60 Senate votes out of 100. The Republican Party currently holds 52 seats, so getting to the necessary 60 votes to block a filibuster may be quite difficult. In the last 70 years, we've had 34 nominees to the court, and 30 of those were confirmed. The average wait time before a vote on a nominee has risen over time, and now sits at about 75 to 100 days for most of those currently serving on the bench. Thus, regardless of opposition or a filibuster, you should expect the Senate's Gorsuch vote to happen no earlier than late April or early May. Of course, the Merrick Garland lack of a vote for 293 days last year is a huge recent outlier that could embolden Democrats to try the same tactics here. If that happens, the Republicans could change the rules on filibusters and cloture for Supreme Court nominees, removing the need for 60 senators in the so-called nuclear option. This nuclear option has been floated by both parties since the second Bush administration, and it was partially enacted by the Democrats in 2013 during a series of reforms to filibuster rules over the last decade. To this end, the Democrats changed the rules then to specifically allow cloture and block filibusters with 51 votes only for executive branch nominees and lower court judge nominees. Although Supreme Court nominees were left out at that time, the current events could expand that nuclear option to remove the right to filibuster these nominees as well. In other words, it's a different party in power, but the same trend against filibusters remains. The bottom line is, regardless of Democratic opposition, the Republican majority has the tools necessary to force a vote on Gorsuch, and likely in about 75 to 100 days from his nomination by President Trump. That will allow the next Supreme Court term, beginning in October, to avoid the awkwardness that has been an evenly split eight-justice court over the 2015 and 2016 terms.
Thanks for listening. Please provide feedback and segment suggestions to me on Twitter at BuckeyeFitzy.
This show is part of the Frog Pants Network. Yes, get more at frogpants.com.